and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 100. Yes, we've done it. We've gone 100 episodes. And in this episode, we are going to talk all doodads of the week. We're going to go through the last 100 episodes and 2 years of podcasts, and we're going to talk about the best photo gear that we have found out there. And to talk about it all is my friend Darren Meller.
Hey, Jim, how are you on this exciting day?
You know, I'm doing good. It's 100 episodes in is a big accomplishment. That's, you know, around 85, 90 hours of photography talk we have done. That's a lot. That's a lot.
That is impressive. I'm so happy that I started listening to Improved Photography. I get to be a part of Improved Photography, and that each and every week we get to be inside your household to tell you a little bit about photography and hopefully help you hone in on those photography skills that you're trying to work on.
Yeah, and it's incredible how everything has changed since when we started. When Dusty O and I started, in October of 2012, and our studio was in this old bank building in downtown Caldwell, kind of an old sleepy city, and Caldwell, Idaho is where we are. And so we didn't really have a good spot to podcast because everything echoed so much. It's an old, you know, all the walls are concrete and tile floor, so everything echoed. And so we went into one of the old bank vaults, you know, with still the steel door on and everything. And we lined the walls all with padded room. And so a salesman came in the first week we were starting the podcast, and Dusty O was out for a couple days, and he came in the door, and I didn't hear him when he came in, and so he started calling and walking around looking for somebody. I don't remember what he was trying to sell me, but he comes in the back, opens this giant bank vault, and sees me standing there in a padded room because we got, you know, thick foam and padded this entire room. So I'm in this padded room in a bank vault, and he looks at me just wide-eyed like, I've got to get out of here. Anyway, times have changed dramatically since then. But we're here. We're ready to talk all the doodads of the week that we've seen over the last 2 years. The first one from episode number one, the very first doodad ever, is still one that I use all the time. And as I go around with people in the Improved Photography Travel Group, I see tons of people having these PEC pads. And if you don't have them, you're making your life harder than it needs to be. They're so cheap. They're like $7 on Amazon, and it's just a package of lint-free wipes that are disposable. So you can, you know, wipe your lens, wipe your sensor. I just, you know, put one over my finger and use the pad of my finger and just wipe the sensor gently. Works great. I've never had problems with sensors, and it's like 30 seconds, you're done cleaning. Just put it one over your finger and wipe the sensor, and you're done. And it's great because if you use a lint-free cloth, those things are never, ever, ever lint free. So these are much, much easier, and they're cheap to use. So that was the very first doodad ever. Well, what did you find, Darren?
Well, I found one from episode 5. And before we move on to talk about that, are we sure we want to trust you on that doodad? You were just saying you were in a padded room not too long ago.
I know. It was this frightening time. I bet that salesman is at home right now, just curled up in a ball in a corner, afraid still.
Right on. Well, I will talk about this one, but this is from episode 5, and it was actually your recommendation for a Crucial M4 solid state drive. And that's actually a solid state drive that, as you and I were talking before recording, can be used for multiple uses, but we both use them inside of our Drobos to make them speed up and move very fast with getting that data to us as fast as possible.
Yeah, and Drobo is one that's another doodad that we have recommended several times on the podcast. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with Drobo in some ways. I've mentioned before that I had a problem with my Drobo, and I didn't feel like the customer service did a great job addressing my concern, especially because it was still under warranty, and they're like, no, just deal with it. It's, you know, whatever, you lost your data, but you have a backup, so deal with it. And I was like, no, guys, this is under warranty. I'm pretty sure you should replace it. Anyway, so I didn't love that. But when it comes right down to it, the Drobo is crazy fast. It's really fast, especially if you're using a Mac. If you're using a window, if you're using Windows, there are probably better other options for you, like the, you know, the Pegasus or the many, many others. There are other options out there. But for the Mac, I feel like the Drobo kind of has the market cornered. It's so fast with Thunderbolt. And what I like about it is the Drobo 5D holds five drives that can be 4 terabytes each. So you can have that's a huge amount of data you have on there. And then what you're mentioning is you can also get a little solid state drive chip, not like the full drive, but the little chip, and it goes underneath the Drobo, and that's used as you know, well, an SSD for your fast kind of cache when you want to get information that you access very quickly. Like with Lightroom, this is really helpful to have, and it just makes the whole Drobo feel a lot more snappy when you have to get stuff. You know, you want to open your file structure and it's right there. You don't have to load that off the drives themselves.
Yeah, I was truly impressed with it. The first time I used it, I thought it was almost mistakenly, I thought I still had my solid state drive plugged in, but it is super fast. It's snappy. I love it. And I think that it's really neat because also Drobo, when I was buying one, they said that they just got approved to start using 6 terabyte drives in there. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you can grow your library and those 5 bays in there, you know, now you're up from 4 gigabytes per bay to 6, I mean terabytes, and there you go. You can grow your library with it.
So that's on my 5D. I don't like need to purchase a new version. They just updated it so we can do that?
Yep, they just updated it and they just got approval to start using drives that are 6 terabytes in there. So that's really an awesome piece of news.
Okay, that actually is an awesome piece of news because as I look at my Drobo dashboard right now, I am like 92% full. It's embarrassing to me. I don't know how I filled it, but it's full of 4 terabyte drives. I have 5 4-terabyte drives and it's 92% full. And I've been ignoring it and closing my eyes to the fact because soon I'm going to outgrow even the Drobo. And I don't know what to do at that point. So anyway, it is what it is, but it's getting full. So 6 terabytes, what we get, it's going to be expensive to buy 5 6-terabyte drives, but it's better than switching to a whole new different type of array or something. So that's good.
That is. And I would hate to see the day when you have to move beyond that, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
At some point I just become a data center and that's when it gets embarrassing. I need some kind of support group. I can't delete my photos. They're all my babies. All right. The next one that I want to recommend from episode 2 of the podcast is still one that I use all the time, and that is the TriPad, TriPad. And it's like this little triangle device that you slip over any normal tripod, and it allows you to set a laptop up on your tripod so that you can tether your laptop to the camera. So I do this when I'm shooting, like if I'm shooting macro photography and I'm like in the house with something that I can sit down with, I love shooting tethered because then I can see the photo big, I can make the Lightroom edits right there and kind of see what the finished product is going to look like. If I'm doing a studio session like that, sometimes I'll do it. If I'm doing product photography, great to shoot tethered. And the tripod makes it so much easier because I mean, you got to put the laptop somewhere and you don't want to like be holding the laptop while you're trying to shoot. It would be awful. So the tripod works really, really well. It's not terribly expensive. I think you can pick them up for like $70. So definitely one that I still recommend. If you ever find yourself shooting tethered, it's worth getting a tripod.
It seems like a really nice option. I don't know. I think I would still like to see you doing acrobatics while trying to hold your laptop and the camera at the same time. So I don't know.
It'd be pretty neat.
Yeah, maybe it's a good recommendation.
That
for
should be an Olympic
you.
Sport is like computer and tripod juggling. That would be really neat.
I would watch it.
All right, what else did you find?
This one goes a little bit further into the episodes. It's episode 6, not too much further, but I actually bought it when I was first started listening to the Improved Photography podcast, but I've been a little bit brave lately and I've gone strapless, like Jim said in the past episode. I had to giggle when he said that, but you recommended back in episode 6 the Black Rapids RS7 camera strap, and it's a great camera strap that allows you to attach either your tripod collar on your lens or the tripod mount on the bottom of your camera to a convenient strap that you can swing around, let it just dangle from your body so it's not in your way when you're hiking or you're trying to get your clients positioned correctly for their photo shoot. It's very convenient, but now in hindsight, really, I don't use straps because they more often than not get in the way.
Life's too short to live with a strap.
Very true.
And I've got to say, you'd look just stunning strapless as the strapless photographer. I think it could be a brand. All right. The next one is Artisan HD. So Peter Lick, who was in the news this week as he sold the most expensive photo ever taken. It was a photo of in Antelope Canyon in Arizona, very, very popular place for photographers. I've gone through there. It's a kind of a, just this really thin slot canyon of red rock all around you. And if you go there at the right times of the day and the right times of the year, you get this column of light coming from the, you know, above you, you know, let's call it 20 meters above you or whatever it is, maybe 10 meters above you, is the top of this canyon. And the light just comes down in this tiny little beam down to the ground. And with all the dirt and stuff in the canyon, it just puts up these little clouds of dust. And it's just an awesome place for photography. Well, Peter Lick took a picture down there and sold it for $6.5 million this week. So that was pretty big news. But anyway, the pick of the week or the doodad was Artisan HD. Artisan HD is a company, the only one that I could really find that will do large format, I mean, big prints of, that you can print exactly in the same style as Peter Lick. So if you've ever been to a Peter Lick gallery, what he does is he prints on Fujiflex media, and then it's laminated with acrylic on top of it, quarter inch, and it makes the photos just feel like they're just wet with color. They're just reflective. It almost feels kind of like metal, or that they're backlit or something. You just can't quite figure out what it is, but it just looks so beautiful. And the trick with this style of print is it looks just blah. It does not look interesting at all. If you just get one of these prints and you put it on the wall, you have to have some ceiling lights that are, you know, like can lights or what are those called? You know, strip lights that are pointed directly at the print so that it gets that reflective look. If you don't do that, then there's really no purpose to doing this. But Artisan HD does this for you. They do this kind of print. They're not cheap at all, because they've got to mail you know, this laminated print, so it's quite the job, but they're beautiful. I have one downstairs in my house, and it's worth it if you really want to make like really awesome, amazing, best photo I've ever taken. This is the place to do it.
Yeah, and if you're getting paid $6 million for a print, I think that it would be a drop in the bucket to pay for it too.
Yeah, I don't think I would worry about it.
Awesome. Well, next up on the doodads is actually one from a previous episode, episode 13, where Jim and Dustin focused on do-it-yourself projects. And one of them was just a do-it-yourself project to make flash modifiers, make your own product tents, things along those lines, just to enable yourself to think outside the box, think outside of having to buy gear, and use that photography ingenuity that's inside your head to recreate the scene with materials you have around the house.
Yeah, very cool. Another one is the Streamlight Stylus Pen. I'm pretty sure it was Dave Black who turned me on to that light. And what it is if you do any kind of light painting, Streamlight Stylus Pen light thing is nice. It's cheap. It's, you know, $10 or something like that. And what makes it good for you know, kind of tabletop light painting. You know, this thing isn't going to paint a landscape, but if you're just doing kind of a tabletop light painting kind of thing, then it works really well because it's, you know, it's just like a, you know, the size of a pen, hence the name, and it's LED, so it's pretty neutral white light. And it has this little rubber nub off on the front that you can adjust forward and back so you can control the beam of the light. And it doesn't have any hot spots in the light signature. When you point the light at the table, it's just even. There's not really hot spots in the light. So Streamlight Stylus Pen Light for all you light painters out there.
That seems like a great one. And another one that Dustin recommended, which we've talked about on the show, it's just so amazing how much we're still recommending some of the similar gear over the years because it's proving to be great gear, is the Monoprice 27-inch display. And it's back of the in the time, and it's when we first announced it, and our understanding is that the supplier is the same one that's that works with Apple Cinema displays that usually cost about $1,000 for those. But it's about $400, and back then it was going to be released in a few weeks, and we've heard some good things on those since we've recorded that episode, haven't we, Jim?
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people that have it. In fact, if my memory serves me right, one of our editors of the website, Jeff Harmon, is using this Monoprice monitor. I'm gonna have to check with him to see if that's true. I think that's right. I think he said that he's using it though.
Yeah, I think he was about ready to order it, the 30-inch one, just about 3 inches more real estate on that display there. But yeah, I think that would still, you know, if we heard Jeff's advice on that one and his feedback, I think that it's probably going to be a pretty solid monitor. And most of the time, no news is good news, so it must be working pretty well for him.
Yeah, that's right. If it wasn't working well, I think we would have heard about it. And it would have been loud. Yeah. All right. Another one that I want to recommend is actually from Juan Pons. When we did our photography podcast mashup, we got to do another one of those. And there are some other podcasts too that we might include in it this time. But is the MTX Multi-Tool from Really Right Stuff. I have been in the situation where you're out in the field, you go to a landscape shoot, and something happens with your tripod, and you just need, you know, a hex key or something like that. And the MTX Multi-Tool is that from Really Right Stuff. It's really just kind of got all the common tools for tripods and ball heads that you could want out in the field. So it's kind of nice insurance if you're only bringing one tripod on a trip, to have at least the tool that you could make any quick adjustments you need to. I nearly needed this in Iceland because my tripod just locked up while we were shooting. And I don't know what happened, but I just couldn't pull the legs out. It started just on one leg. And then 20 minutes later, I couldn't pull out the other leg. And so I was shooting on this little midget tripod. And I was so frustrated. I was like, what is going on? Why are the legs just not moving? And I was pulling with all my might, and they were just stuck. And then another one of the people on the trip came over to me and said, oh, man, I got my tripod wet, and now the legs are frozen in. I thought, oh, that's what happened. And then there was nothing wrong with the tripod at all. I stuck my tripod in the river where we were shooting just to get it just the right angle on the landscape. And then it was cold enough that everything froze in there. And there was no way you could possibly pull those legs out once it was frozen.
Yeah, Mother Nature did all the work to cause you some frustration, some head scratching in that situation.
It was so crazy because I thought, well, I can understand, you know, if one leg just broke, but why would two legs break at the same time? It was weird.
It is. And one dude out of the week that comes from episode 26 of the Improved Photography Podcast that you mentioned since you brought up Iceland was the Vagabond Mini Lithium Battery by Paul C. Buff. And
oh, yeah.
I know you... How does that stand up compared to the one that you brought to Iceland recently?
Well, I guess they can be used for the same thing. The one that I used in Iceland, I ended up hating. It's from a company called Nature Power, and it's to, you know, plug in your laptop and stuff while you're in the plane. You can charge your phone. You could even charge your camera battery because it's a regular wall plug. Problem with it is... although it's a huge battery and it is heavy, but the real problem that I found with it was that it takes 18 hours to charge the battery pack. And so, you know, I'm not asleep for 18 hours. And so it wasn't ready to go the next day, even if I had it plugged in all night. And so it ended up not being my favorite thing. But this, the Vagabond Mini Lithium battery from Paul C. Buff is, well, in many ways, it's similar. It's just a huge battery pack. This is a lot bigger. It's certainly not for travel, but you can use it to, you know, power your flashes. You could also use it to charge batteries, your cell phone, whatever. But it's big. But if you're using studio strobes, you want this battery pack. This is the one. It's so much lighter than normal battery packs. Still not travel at all. But compared to normal flash battery packs, this one's a good one.
Is this
it's great. Oh,
Sorry, Jim, but is this the one that I see a lot of photographers carrying around with their Einstein flashes?
Yeah, so Paul Seebuff makes the Einstein series of flashes. They also make like the white lightnings and stuff that's their older model. When you go to the JCPenney portrait studio, you're pretty likely to see something like that.
yes, sir.
And... I pity the people who are still using studio strobes. You know, if you're in a studio and everything's like locked up, you know, you got everything set, I can understand it. But unless you have like three assistants to be helping you, you do not want to be shooting studio strobes. Using them is an experience. I mean, they're awesome tools, but you got to pay for it when you're using studio strobes. They are so heavy to carry around and so much junk that I just found it was getting too much in the way. Even if I had one assistant, you need to have a serious shoot setup to justify studio strobes, in my opinion. I think it's just so much easier to use one speed light, or if you need more light, use multiple speed lights. But I'm never going back to studio strobes.
I don't see myself going in that direction either. And if I have to, I'm going to pull a Jim Harmer, use some gaff tape, wrap it around two speed lights and put them inside a softbox or an umbrella just to get more power. I think that I'd rather carry two speed lights than two studio strobes any day of the week.
Yeah, for sure. Another doodad that Dusty O recommended is Portrait Professional Software. Okay, this is one that is not ubiquitous among the photography community. We don't often talk about this, and when you look at their sales page, you're like, okay, this thing's a gimmick. But actually, it's pretty cool. Portrait Professional is standalone software that is for retouching your portraits. What's cool about it is it has an algorithm that will analyze the face in the picture, figure out what's I quote unquote wrong with the face, or what could be done to the face to that would make most people think it would look more beautiful, and in a click of a button it does that. But sometimes it can be kind of a dramatic change. Like you look at yourself and you're like, whoa, my nose is half the size or whatever, or I look like I lost 20 pounds and it's too much. But the cool thing is it runs this algorithm, pops out the picture that looks really cool, and then there's a slider that you can just slide how much of the effect that you want. And it really is pretty neat. Aside from that, it has regular kind of retouching tools, skin smoothing, you know, a little sparkle in the eyes, stuff like that. I don't use this regularly. I feel really comfortable in Lightroom. I have, you know, all my presets and tools in Lightroom where I feel very comfortable doing things. But if I were doing, you know, headshots or I was shooting for other people all the time and I just didn't feel real comfortable with that kind of thing, Portrait Professional is a good option. I do use it every once in a while, but I don't use it regularly. But that's not to say it isn't pretty cool software. When Dusty O and I tried it out, we were both very skeptical when we started. In fact, we were laughing at things, thinking, oh, this is gonna be silly, but okay, it was pretty cool.
No, I actually had some fans of the Nebraska Photographers Network on Facebook. They have a page where people commented about it, and someone came through and showed a really cool technique for editing some really bad acne. And they just went on Google, searched for bad acne scars, and they were able to go through and do a Photoshop fix. And then someone else chimed in and brought up this software, and I was really amazed to see how powerful it was. But then also looking at its demos and certain things, like it can almost thin someone's face out and make them look completely different than what they really look like. So, I mean, we can do that in Photoshop too, and I feel comfortable enough with Photoshop to do it, but I do see this being advantageous if you're doing a lot of photos at once, if you're doing post-processing as an assistant for another photographer, or you happen just to have a bunch of photos that just need a lot of retouching on the face. I think that it does have its merit though.
Yeah, for sure. Another doodad that I really like, and one that I've just gone back to consistently since trying it out for the first time in episode 37, is Wasabi Power. Wasabi, kimosabi. Wasabi is Wasabi. It sounds like from the name that they're from China or Japan or something like that. I don't know anything about the company itself, but they have a ton of third-party batteries for cameras, video cameras, DSLR cameras, all kinds of stuff. And so when I get a new camera, if it has a different battery in it, the first thing I do is go to Amazon and search for the name of the battery, you know, Nikon ENE L15 or whatever it is that you're using, and then Wasabi. And if they make a battery, I trust them just because I've used them a lot of different times. They have great deals. You know, often you'll find two batteries and a wall adapter and a car adapter in a kit for like $45 for different DSLRs. So to get two batteries and those adapters is pretty cool. It's nice to have extra chargers because there's nothing more frustrating than being ready to run out for a shoot and you cannot find your charger for a landscape shoot or something. It just drives me crazy. So I like to have lots of chargers around because I tend to leave them in camera bags and get them lost and stuff. So Wasabi Power is one that I've used a lot.
Ah, I can breathe a sigh of relief because I just ordered two of those off Amazon for the new Sony A6000 that we'll talk about in another episode, because the battery life, as we've talked about in previous episodes, on the mirrorless systems aren't the greatest, and I wanted to have some extra batteries there, and that's exactly what I got, was two Wasabi batteries that are for the A6000, a wall charger that plugs directly into my AC adapter or inside my DC adapter in my vehicle, and at least now I know, because you've said that, Jim, my camera's not going to blow up. Phew.
And did you say wasabi kimosabi when you checked out?
I was thinking more about sushi, but yeah, similar.
We should make that the improved photography tradition. Every time you get a new camera, it's a wasabi battery, and then you got to go out for sushi.
Yes, I agree.
And I'm going to be having to take you out for sushi soon because you have a hot new camera in your hands. I'm anxious to hear what you think about that after we get through some of these doodads.
That sounds great. The next one that I would like to recommend goes back to a previous episode prior to that episode. It's episode 31. The doodad of the week in this one is actually photoclasses.com, where we recommend the portrait class, because actually working with students inside the portrait class and whatnot, I've seen so much improvement once they start to understand light, where to place light, and things along those lines. We see so much improvement when students enter the beginning of our classes and exit. But this one is definitely one I would have to say goes neck and neck with Lightroom when seeing development from the beginning stages to the stages when they're sending us the last photos as they're wrapping up the last day of the courses.
Yeah, and I'll give you a tip if you're looking at that portrait class is maybe hold off just a little bit, because I may be updating some of those videos and doing a little update to that class pretty soon. But that Lightroom class that you mentioned as well, the Lightroom class is... Well, I can't say it's awesome because I made it. That doesn't sound right. But like, at least from what the students are doing, it's really cool. You know, when you start out in Photoshop or Lightroom, it's a pretty frustrating experience. It's not necessarily user-friendly when you first hop into it. So it's really worth the time, especially got an extra time over Christmas or something. You know, you're going to be with family, to get a little bit of time off work. Just take like 10 minutes every morning and you'll get a lesson every single day. Take 10 minutes every morning and watch a lesson. And by New Year's, you can have a lot more power in your photography workflow. And a lot of the photos you've taken that you thought were kind of just dead, you're going to see that actually you can do some pretty cool things with them.
Very true. And another dude out of the week I'd like to mention is the Cowboy Studio Light Tent. It's a 24-inch photo softbox, and I know we mentioned there's do-it-yourself ways, but this is a pretty inexpensive item that will help you with product photography. It'll even help you in situations, if you think about it, for posting things on eBay. If you want to sell that old camera once CES 2015 rolls around, and you want to expose that picture of that camera very well and just shoot it with your iPhone and an off-camera flash, using a softbox light tent is so neat for having that even lighting across the whole product that you're trying to capture with an image.
Yeah, definitely. Photo Quote is another doodad that we've recommended. And this is what you do when it's like emergency. I finally sold a photo. What do I charge the person? Photo Quote is your answer. It's at CraddocksPhotoSoftware.com. But just search Photo Quote. That's FOTO. And it just kind of gives you a ballpark idea of how much you should be charging for your photography. And I think it's a useful resource, especially the first few times you sell a photo where you just have no idea what to charge and they're like, you know, how much is it? And you're like, huh, I got this blank invoice. What do I write down? definitely that. Another doodad that I like and I use every single day is the Apple Magic Mouse. Darren, you know how important it is to have a magic mouse because I know you're using the trackpad, right?
Yes, and we were just discussing this on how I am having trouble right-clicking just because it's not as intuitive as I'd like it to be, and I keep having these errors where it's saying Bluetooth connection established, Bluetooth connection lost, Bluetooth established, lost, and it just goes back and forth, and it happens at the worst times, and I think I'm going to go with the Magic Mouse because I've never had problems with that when using that product in the past.
Yeah, and actually you can use the Apple Magic Mouse even on a PC. You got to do a little tiny hack, but yeah, you can definitely use it with a PC as well. It's the best mouse ever made. And I guess I'm a little bit picky about mouses. I've owned quite a few mouses over time. This one's cool. What's awesome about it is it's just a regular mouse. It's a nice looking, you know, whatever. It's what you would expect a mouse from Apple to look like. And the top surface of it is kind of a trackpad. And so you can do, you can tap on it and stuff and kind of do some cool things with the mouse itself. It does some pretty neat things. It's easy. You just move your finger over it. I just like it. This is the mouse that I use, and I've tried lots of different ones. I just feel comfortable with this one. So if your mouse is driving you nuts or you're just using a trackpad right now, Magic Mouse. Very nice.
I think it's very nice, and I also think it's almost counterintuitive now that I'm looking at my office right now. Just to be honest, I have a trackpad and I have a Wacom Intuos stylus tablet for when I want to use those, use a stylus to get in and get those fine details when I'm doing some photo edits. And to me, I think the Magic Mouse makes a lot more sense, but it segues into another dude out of the week that we've mentioned before, which is the Wacom Intuos professional graphics tablet. And it is an amazing device that allows you to connect to your photos wirelessly. You just plug a little wireless adapter into a free USB port on the back of your computer. I know that can be easier said than done for some people, but you plug it in there. It has a rechargeable battery that you charge via macro USB, not the mini USB cord, and you're drawing right away. You install a driver, and it's just so fun to be able to grab a brush inside Photoshop, Lightroom, or any other type of software to actually have that free drawing experience like you would if you had a pen in your hand.
Yeah, very cool. Another one that I like is the Siri Monopod. Siri is spelled Siriui. I guess it looks like Sirui, but I'm told on good authority that it's pronounced Siri. Anyway, it's a very inexpensive monopod, and it's just built really solid. I mean, this is a monopod that I've had no problem sticking a 400, 600 millimeter lens on, and it's done the job. Very lightweight, and it compact. I think it's 4 or 5 sections, and so it compacts down really, really tiny. It's something you can kind of just chuck in your photo bag. I don't use a monopod real often. I do when I shoot sports, but that's not every day. What I use it for the very most is when I'm out doing a flash photography shoot and I mount my flash to the end of the monopod. You have to get a little adapter to get the right size for your flash, but really, really nice to have a flash on the end of a monopod so you don't have to have light stands everywhere. They're just harder to carry. I can just hand this monopod to an assistant, has a light speed light on it and an umbrella or a softbox, and it's just like this little wand of light that they can put wherever I need it to.
No, and as soon as my dad hears this podcast, he's going to smile ear from ear. He was so happy when he figured out that little hack. He's like, look what I found out. I can put this this adapter right on my monopod, carry it around. And he actually handed me that when he was doing some shots. I would have the Rogue flash bender on there, which is another doodad of the week we've mentioned in the past. And we would just hold the flash or the speed light where we needed a fill-in light, and it extended out to the appropriate distance. And it's such a cool hack. I mean, it even looks more professional. And it adds to that professional presence as you have as a photographer when you're doing a shoot. I think it's such a cool little hack.
Yeah, for sure. And you get better results too, because you can put that light wherever you want. You know, if you have a tripod and you want to put the light directly above the model, how are you going to do that without the light stand being directly in the middle of the picture? Well, so if you just have the monopod, you just have your assistant stand off to the side and just hold it at an angle right over the model. It's just so much more versatile to have it there instead of having your flash trapped on a light stand.
Yes, and also if those light stand or those tripods or monopods, sorry, are not long enough for you. Remember, recently we did mention using paint pole adapters as well, because that helps out.
Yeah, I do that as well. I have a painter's pole with a little adapter on that. And then if you want to put the light anywhere you can, I mean, if you we want to put the light, you know, 3 meters up in the sky, you got it, because it's a really long painter's pole. And so, yeah, you can do it anywhere. Also, coincidentally, a bird crapped on my front window. It was awful. So our living room is 20 feet tall. The ceiling is 20 feet tall in the living room. Just really high ceiling in there, which however tall that is for you folks. And what is that? 7 meters or something like that, 8 meters. Anyway, roughly. Really, really high ceiling. And so a bird crapped on the window way up at the top of the living room. So you look up and you just see this bird crap. And so I was really glad that I got this painter's pole just in time for that as well. very versatile doodad. All right, a next one is Dream Shoot Rentals. This is Lindsay Adler's business. Lindsay Adler's an awesome fashion photographer who we had on the podcast on episode 51. And this is, she has, you know, the best New York fashion models making awesome dresses and stuff. You know, these are the dresses, you know, with huge trains extending way out beside them, and, you know, all kinds of just, you know, the stuff that you see on ads, but you're like, what? I can't go to JCPenney and buy that dress. How am I going to do a shoot with that? This is where you go. Or if you want to do a Romeo and Juliet thing and have that kind of antique dress, Marie Antoinette kind of thing, she's got all that. Just a bunch of cool dresses and kids, you know, clothing and stuff. If you want to do a cool conceptual kind of shoot with kids, very, very cool service. I haven't had the opportunity to order just yet, but I do have some cool portrait sessions that I'm looking forward to doing in the spring, and I'm definitely going to be a customer here.
I'm excited to see what we come up with, because she has so much selection, and I think that it's really impossible, if you're willing to put in the work to pull off the shoot, it's really impossible to come back with something that you're not really going to love. And we've been so fortunate to have such awesome photographers on the podcast over the years. One dude out of the week that I'm just going to mention as a whole thing is episode 49. It's been one of our most popular episodes we've had on the Improved Photography podcast, but it's where Jim sits down with the famous sports photographer Dave Black, and there's just countless pieces of advice and doodads and knowledge within that episode. So if you have an extra little bit of time to listen to another episode or have a re-listen to an episode, this one definitely can get you places. It got me inside the Formula One race in Barcelona, Spain, where I barely spoke the language, but listening to his advice to get press credentials for sporting events to take your sports photography to a whole new level really are within this episode. So I do think that it would be great to mention episode 49 as a doodad of the week worth noting.
Very awesome. Now, that will definitely get you motivated and excited on your photography. If you want to just have a very sad evening where you just have no motivation and you feel horrible about yourself, check out episode number 63 with Ryan Dyer. You will be put in your place, because his photos, I guarantee, are better than yours and way better than mine. Ryan is just an awesome landscape photographer, one of the best in the world. I mean, he is awesome. So check out Ryan Dyer's portfolio from episode 63. Just does incredible, incredible work. Yeah, just go there and grab some tissues. You're going to have yourself a nice cry and just say, I'm not worthy. It's really good. Really cool stuff.
And I venture to say the same thing about what Joel Grimes shoots as well, too, with his strobing and his HDR images that he does. I think that once you first look at the image, it's going to be a little bit daunting for you, maybe a little bit depressing. You might want to grab a quart of ice cream to eat while you read the article or listen to episode 44. But Joel Grimes' style is something to aspire to kind of figure out how he does it and then put your own artistic spin on it. I'm not a big advocate for anyone copying anyone's style, but I'm definitely an advocate for you learning how someone approaches a photo and then putting your own spin on it to make it your own. So I think that Joel Grimes has such a unique style to where if you saw a photo come across the internet, you would know it was his. His style stands out so much that I think taking a look at his work would definitely keep you motivated as well.
Yeah, you know, I think that's kind of an interesting topic. I guess one we should delve into another day. But I recently heard a complaint from a fairly well-known photographer who teaches his photography style online. And it's not Joel Grimes. I'm not saying that. I'm only including that here now because you were kind of talking about this topic is all. But this photographer was complaining that people kept copying his style. And I said, wait a minute, don't you sell tutorials on your website about how you do your style, teaching people how to do it? And he said, yeah. I was like, well, why are you upset then that people are copying you? You're showing people how to do it. Do you expect them not to do it after they spend money learning how to do it? And you could tell it really gave the person a little bit of pause. And anyway, it kind of was an interesting topic for me that, you know, you definitely don't want to steal other people's creative work. That kind of defeats the whole purpose of photography. But at the same time, it's really tough right now to have anything that's uniquely your own because we all are borrowing from each other. We have to. That's just kind of how creativity works, is you take what one person does and add and blend and add your own things to it, and it kind of morphs into something new that kind of pops up and then something else. Anyway, an interesting topic we can talk about another day, but it was just kind of on the top of my mind.
I can agree because before we dive into it any deeper, I will say this, even artists, painters, even sculptors, they've been doing that for years too. And if you look at any artist autobiography or biography from the past, you'll know that they'll say in there somewhere, I was inspired by this artist, and this artist, and their work is still completely different.
Yeah. And I always try to be so careful with that, you know, because I listen to other podcasts and then I want to make sure that I'm not, you know, copying anything that they say on the podcast. And I'm reading other books, but it's really hard. Sometimes you don't remember where it came from. It just kind of becomes part of you when you're around photography all the time, or, you know, you're looking at other people's work and it kind of just does become part of you. And so a lot of times, even if you're not at all consciously doing it, other people's creativity does pop up in what you do. And so as careful as you try to be so careful with that kind of thing, there are times where it's kind of unavoidable. Anyway, an interesting topic, but I did feel strongly about that if you're teaching people how to do your style, I don't think you have the right to say you can't copy me. I mean, certainly you couldn't take their photo, you know, their actual shot, but if once you teach other people how to do your style, you can't complain then when they do what you taught them to do. Anyway. All right. Episode 65, I talked about the Canon 10 to 18 millimeter lens, which was newly announced at that time. This is a really unique lens. I have not personally shot with it, but I have seen really good reviews from people who I trust. And the cool thing about the Canon 10 to 18 millimeter lens is that it opens up serious landscape photography to crop sensor cameras. If you shoot Nikon and you want to shoot landscape and you're on crop sensor, oh man, you're just kind of limited in what you can do. Really, your best bet is going to be the Tokina 11-16. Nikon makes a 10-24. I've used it many, many, many times. It's hard to get excited about that lens. The Canon 10-18 is very inexpensive. It's like $300. And the reviews that I've seen so far are really promising on it. So it really does a lot for the whole lens system, having that hole filled for Canon. So that's a very significant dude out of the week.
It is a significant dude out of the week. And one thing that really comes to mind too is we've mentioned different types of bags over the year. Over the years, we've had guests on the show that use ones by Bauer, the F-stop bags. You and I use Click Elite Pro bags. We've recommended Low Pro bags.
The Patels use the F-stop gear.
Yep, they use the F-stop gear. And then you and I use the Click Elite stuff. So what would you recommend after all this time immersing in photography? Would you still say Click Elite, or do you think that there's just not a perfect bag out there yet and we just need to call upon the bag for the situation?
Well, I definitely think there is some element of that, but there is a new bag that I've had my eye on. It's a bag from Mindshift Gear. And Mindshift Gear is kind of a spin-off company from another popular bag maker. And it's a it's an interesting bag. So what it does, it's the Rotation 180 Pro. It has a little pack. It's kind of like a fanny pack, but it's, you know, in your normal backpack, the part of it, the waist belt, can spin around to bring the bottom section of your backpack to the front. So you can grab a different lens and then shoop, roll it back into the backpack, and it just looks like a normal backpack. And for landscape photography, that's pretty nice, because I'm always setting my bag down on the ground and then I've got to run over and switch lenses and stuff. So wouldn't it be nice to have something on my bag? I can just keep all my gear on my bag, on my back, and then rotate it around. I've been looking at them in the camera store, eyeing them. It's a very expensive bag, like $400 for a camera bag. But I don't know. That's one I might be interested in trying. It looks like a really cool bag. But for most photographers, you know, it's going to be way too much. You're not going to want to spend $400 on a bag. And for those who want a nice quality camera bag with a rain sleeve and good zippers and everything else, I think Click kind of hits a nice part in a nice niche in the marketplace, and that they're reasonably priced. I mean, they're still expensive bags, but they're much more reasonably priced than the Mindshift and good quality bags. So yeah, I definitely recommend Click bags. I still use them all the time, but that doesn't mean that I'm not looking over to the other side of the fence and eyeing some other stuff.
It's always good to look around. I think that we need to always be aware of what's coming, you know, in the market. Like we've teased I've dipped my toes into the Sony system a little bit, but you know, I just want to see what they have to offer, because I don't want to miss out on some opportunity just because I'm brand loyal. But before we talk about that, one more thing, since we've had a very familiar guest on the show not too recently, when Dusty O came back and visited, the D810 was not yet released and you had it pre-ordered. So what are your thoughts on it after shooting it for a while, drowning one and having a new one?
Okay, well, the camera graveyard is sitting right next to me. I have a D800, a D750, and two D810s. not looking good over there. It makes me cry every time I look to my right. Maybe I should stop doing that. It really is bringing a tear to my eye. you know, I took a brand new D810 and a brand new D750 to Iceland with me. And I said, all right, let's try these out. Let's compare both of these cameras. And I've been shooting the D800 line for a long time. And I thought, you know, let's see how much difference there is between the D800 line, you know, the D810, and this D750 that's a new camera, just released. It's full frame. It's a step up from the D610. It's a pretty powerful camera, 24 megapixel sensor. And, you know, after shooting both cameras in Iceland, after about 2 days, I realized that I'm just going to have to bid the Nikon D810 farewell. The better camera is the less expensive camera and is the D750, at least in my opinion. Now, you all know I love megapixels and I love the 36 megapixel sensor on the Nikon D810. Really, really, really love it. But the D750 is really nice. It has this seems trivial, but it's not. When you hold that camera, it has a really deep grip. So where the tips of your fingers go, and they usually kind of cram against the camera. Sometimes I feel like I'm going to get a callus there. It's just deep there. It feels easier to hang on to. It's a smaller camera. It's a lighter camera. It's a little bit quicker in the frame rate. It has a tiltable flip LCD screen. Dun da da da. Angels get their wings. Lots of hallelujah music. I'm so glad to see that tiltable LCD screen. The image quality is fantastic. Now, it doesn't have the 36 megapixels. It's 24 megapixels, which is plenty for most people, but we've talked about a lot of the reasons that I like having the higher megapixel cameras. So, yeah, I don't know. There are some drawbacks to the camera. I would say the biggest drawback for me personally is the megapixels. The second drawback for me is that the mode dial is a little bit different on the D750. On the D810, it has buttons on top of the mode dial so you can get to your bracketing and ISO and stuff. On the D750, it has your mode, you know, that you flip around to your different modes and stuff. And it's just a little bit more cumbersome to get to some of the deeper things in the camera, like bracketing. but not much. I mean, it's a tiny bit. And if I were to, if I had to pick between features, do you want the tiltable LCD screen or do you want the different mode dial? Dude, I picked the tiltable LCD screen. For shooting landscapes, I use that thing all the time. And so I'm getting rid of the Nikon D810 and I am sticking with the Nikon D750. It's a much less expensive camera, and in my opinion, it's just a better camera.
I'm speechless. I did not expect that announcement. I knew that you liked the camera, and I thought that that's really neat. So that is really cool. You've shot the best of the best with the Nikon D4S and decided that the 18 megapixel sensor on that one, or is it 16 or 18?
I want to
Somewhere in that area. 16, 18 megapixel sensor wasn't quite enough as far as having the speed and having the lower megapixels, but it 16. Seems like this 16.
That's
okay.
A joke. 16?
I know.
I was 16 a long time ago. Why hasn't the camera grown up with me?
Exactly. And now this 24 megapixels, like the things were going through my head is, are you going to have that enough depth of field? You know, when bringing back those shadows that you had with your extra, I'm not depth of field, but dynamic range and bringing back shadows with those landscape shots. Or, and with the D750, are you pretty confident in it? This is shocking to me.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. As far as the image quality is concerned, it does better in the low light. I can't tell a difference in dynamic range. I haven't put it through the lab comparison. I use the Imatest software to, you know, when I really want to know what the difference is between them, and I can get a definite scientific answer on all kinds of stuff like that. But I haven't put them through the lab, but I don't see a difference in dynamic range. You know, sharpness is great on both. I don't see any issues at all. And so for me, I just want the camera more comfortable and easier to use. And for me, that's the Nikon D750. It does have Wi-Fi capability, at least compatibility with the communication units, the WT5A and UT1. So it does some pretty neat things. The lighter form factor, deeper grip, and tiltable LCD screen, and a little bit faster frame rate were enough to win me over.
Yeah, and I made a big change this week too. We've been teasing about it the whole episode. I actually went ahead yesterday and picked up the Sony A6000. I figured that it was a good way to dip my toes into the mirrorless market. Didn't really care for any of the kit lenses that came with it, so bought the body only and then bought their 50mm f1.8 OSS, which is their optical steady shot, which is image stabilization for them. And I'm pretty impressed from what I've seen with this thing shooting around the house, and those highlights you brought up with the D750 of having a tiltable screen, which I do not have on my 6D, and it's kind of not as useful in my opinion on the 70D. This little camera, form, function, and everything I've used it for just seems to be a good fit. So I mean, that's one thing I think that we're realizing as a theme, is that we should never really be stagnant in a position where if we have the ability to change gear and change around our shooting style and what we use to accomplish, you know, our end result, I think we should always be open to that, because the technology, the market, and what our consumers are looking for as far as clients, that's always going to be changing. I mean, we saw, looking at the difference between, you know, what people are shooting in 2013 versus what they're shooting in 2015 and 2014 has really changed. I mean, it makes sense that we would be changing cameras. And I think that I'm going to be bringing this camera, this little tiny one, and my 6D to China versus bringing the 70D as my backup, because I'm just rethinking photography a lot as I learn more about it.
So answer this to me. I think it might be kind of revealing as to what you think of the camera overall. Mm-hmm. Provided that you haven't been able to spend a ton of time with it yet. But who could come up to you asking for camera advice that you would suggest the A6000 as their primary camera?
I would suggest it to anybody. I would suggest this camera to anybody, as long as you are not shooting a ton of sports and shooting a ton of wildlife photography. This one actually, Sony boasts, is their at the time when they released it, is the fastest focusing. It uses a hybrid focusing system that uses both phase detection and contrast detection. So it focuses relatively fast. I think it could keep up with youngsters running around the backyard or the playground, for the mom or dad who wants to shoot pictures of their kids. I think it would work great for for the hobbyist photographer. And also the really cool thing that I'm very excited to use this for, since we're going to get some weather in the 50 degree range this weekend, is for street photography. It's really hard to get a candid street photography shot of someone with a big clunky camera. And a lot of street photographers out there will use their iPhones, they'll use a smartphone of some sort. And these mirrorless cameras also enable us to do that too, to pull off that shot, to have that candid street photography look. So I think that, this camera can fit a lot of people's needs. I mean, from what I've seen as far as ISO capability, shooting in low light, the lens selection of where it's at, if you're not really doing strong landscapes also, I would kind of steer you more towards Canon and Nikon if you're doing strong landscape shots too, because the best lens they have right now, in my opinion, is the 16 millimeter and the 50 millimeter prime lens, without getting into the $1,000 lens range. And like I said, I was dipping my toes in this, so I didn't want to spend a bunch of money on lenses. I was able to get a 50 millimeter for $200 and get the camera for $600, and that's under $1,000, and it's shooting at 24 megapixels, the same amount of megapixels as your D750. And it's shooting way more megapixels than any Canon camera out there right now. So that says a lot.
Yeah, it definitely does. So does it replace your Canon?
It's not. I don't know. I think it's too soon to tell. Like right now, it's like having that old car that we just traded, or we just sold for a new one in the garage. Like it's the deal hasn't gone through yet. We still haven't sold it yet completely. We could still keep it in the garage, but that new car just has that fresh new car smell on it. It has a lot of features that I'm looking for. It even offers to connect to my cell phone right away if I want to send images to my cell phone. And those are some compatibility issues I've had with Canon. I know Nikon has even more compatibility issues with connectivity to your cell phone and being able to share images, but this also has NFC, and we've talked in the podcast before about how nice it would be to have a customizable program with an NFC card in here on a monopod for sports photography. And once these things get better at focusing with phase detection, I think that these, and hopefully something from Canon and Nikon, like Tony Northrup was saying, will come out to where it's going to give these guys a run for their money. But Sony's definitely leading the way, in my opinion. I think it'd be really neat for you to pick up the X-T1 on the Fuji side of the system and take the hit on the megapixels to see which camera performs a little bit better.
Yeah, you know, that's my real problem with that Fuji X-T1. That is like the most usable, photographer-friendly camera in existence, is the Fuji X-T1. But so low on megapixels, I just can't do it. I can't do it. Anyway, but hopefully we'll see some new stuff in the spring, and then maybe it'll be time to hit that buy button, and another angel will get its wings when that Amazon box shows up on my doorstep.
And one last note with the Sony system, there is a little bit of a learning curve. I'd probably consider it to be similar to switching from a Canon to a Nikon, but I like their menu system more. As we were talking about in a previous episode of the podcast, the menu systems inside most of our DSLRs are very antiquated. This seems more fresh and new to me, and the only thing that I could really think of is showing up to a professional shoot with a smaller camera and having that perception of the client thinking of you differently for not having a big DSLR camera. But as long as you're confident, I think you can overcome that tiny little setback.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have talked about a ton of photography doodads and more that I would love to go through, but our time is running dry. One last thing that I want to recommend, though, is as you're looking at, over your schedule for 2015, to go to improvephotography.com/travelgroup. If you haven't been on a trip with us yet, definitely come check us out. We have a trip going to Oregon February 18, I think, is when it starts. And we have a Facebook group that you can join there. And also to China, Guilin, China, that's probably going to be in the April time frame. So two trips that we're putting details on, and more that I'm going to be adding this week. I'm hoping to hit Texas at some point next week next year, and a couple others. So definitely check us out on the Improved Photography Travel Group, and come shoot with us. We're looking forward to meeting many of you.
We're really excited, and thank you so much for joining us for 100 episodes of awesome photography geekery and knowledge, and we hope to see you in the next 100.
All right. See ya. Thank you.